Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse, and this is my third and final series on the war in Vietnam, titled, A Letter is a Living Voice. We will be reading letters and documented accounts written by Vietnam veterans. These letters show all the emotion of war, from fear to anger to love and fellowship. These are only the opinions of the writers of the documents and not those of the voice of Vashon or the readers. In addition, while some of the language in the documents may appear to be racially insensitive, it is the actual language of war. It is my opinion that to use the exact language to give the listener a true understanding of the veterans' ratings and their associated emotions is extremely important. In war, we demonize our enemy through our language and our pictures. We make them inanimate, therefore easier to kill.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Wait a minute, please make the postman wait. Wait a minute, wait a minute.
Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our third series on Vietnam. We're reading letters. Here with me is Susan Schreier, and she will be reading some of the letters. And one of the things that I think I've kind of done is I've kind of morphed into a more eclectic group of readings and writings and poetry. They all come from veterans. One of the things I'd like to do today is I found this piece that was a gentleman who took a group of students to Washington, D.C., and looking at some of the memorials. And while I understand this is not Vietnam, it is World War II in the Pacific, it really shows to me the similarities of different battles. They may be different people in different countries, but the fear of war, the destruction of war, and how it affects individuals is so important. And before we go into war, those are the things we need to be aware of. So I'm going to ask Susan if she'd read this first piece. And so, Susan, thank you for doing this.
Sure.
And volunteering your time.
The below-quoted article was written in October 2000 by Wisconsin resident Michael T. Powers, whose name has been omitted from most of the Internet-circulated versions. It was transcribed from a videotape he made of a talk given by the author, James Bradley, at the Marine Corps War Memorial in Arlington, Virginia. Bradley, whose father John was one of the six men pictured in the famous photograph of the flag raising on Mount Suribachi in February of 1945, and is thus depicted in the monument sculpture, had earlier that year published Flags of Our Fathers, an account of the life stories of those six men. Each year, my video production company is hired to go to Washington, D.C. with the eighth grade class from Clinton, Wisconsin, where I grew up, to videotape their trip. I greatly enjoy visiting our nation's capital, and each year I take some special memories back with me. This fall's trip was especially memorable. On the last night of our trip, we stopped at the Iwo Jima Memorial, and this memorial is the largest bronze statue in the world and depicts one of the most famous photographs in history, that of the six brave men raising the American flag at the top of Mount Suribachi on the island of Iwo Jima, Japan, during World War II. Over 100 students and chaperones all piled off the buses and headed towards the memorial. I noticed a solitary figure at the base of the statue, and as we got closer, he asked, "What's your name and where are all you guys from?" I told him that my name was Michael Powers and that we were from Clinton, Wisconsin. "Hey, I'm a cheesehead too. Come gather around, cheeseheads, and I'll tell you a story." James Bradley just happened to be in Washington, D.C. to speak at the memorial that following day. He was there that night to say good night to his dad, who had previously passed away, but whose image is part of the statue. He was just about to leave when he saw the buses pull up. I videotaped him as he spoke to us and received his permission to share what he said from my videotape. It's one thing to tour the incredible monuments filled with history in Washington, D.C., but it's quite another to get the kind of insight we received that night. When all had gathered around, he reverently began to speak, and here are his words from that night. My name is James Bradley, and I'm from Antigua, Wisconsin. My dad is on that statue, and I just wrote a book called Flags of Our Fathers, which is number 5 on the New York Times bestseller list right now. It's the story of the 6 boys you see behind me. 6 boys raised the flag. The first guy putting the pole in the ground is Harlan Block. Harlan was an all-state football player. He enlisted in the Marine Corps with all the senior members of his football team. They were off to play another type of game, a game called war. But it didn't turn out to be a game. Harlan, at the age of 21, died with his intestines in his hands. I don't say that to gross you out. I say that because there are generals who stand in front of this statue and talk about the glory of war. You guys need to know that most of the boys in Iwo Jima were 17, 18, and 19 years old. He pointed back at the statue. You see this next guy? That's Rene Gagnon from New Hampshire. If you took Rene's helmet off at the moment this photograph was taken and looked at the webbing of that helmet, you would find a photograph of his girlfriend. Rene put that in there for protection because he was scared. He was 18 years old. Boys won the Battle of Iwo Jima. Boys, not old men. The next guy here, the third guy in this tableau, was Sergeant Mike Strank. Mike is my hero. He was a hero of all these guys. They called him the old man because he was so old. He was already 24. When Mike would motivate his boys in training camp, he didn't say, let's go kill the enemy or let's go die for our country. He knew he was talking to little boys. Instead, he would say, you do what I'll say, and I'll get you home to your mothers. The last guy on this side of the statue is Ira Hayes, a Pima Indian from Arizona. Ira Hayes walked off Iwo Jima. He went to the White House with my dad. President Truman told him, you are a hero. He told reporters, how can I feel like a hero when 250 of my buddies hit the island with me and only 27 of us walked off alive? So you take your class at school, 250 of you spending a year together, having fun, doing everything together. Then all 250 of you hit the beach, but only 27 of your classmates walk off alive. That was Ira Hayes. He had images of horror in his mind. Ira Hayes died dead drunk, face down, at the age of 32, 10 years after this picture was taken. The next guy going around the statue is Franklin Soucy from Hilltop, Kentucky, a fun-loving hillbilly boy. His best friend, who was now 70, told me, yeah, you know, we took 2 cows up on the porch of the Hilltop General Store. Then we strung wire across the stairs so the cows couldn't get down. Then we fed them Epsom salts. Those cows crapped all night. Yes, he was a fun-loving hillbilly boy. Franklin died on Iwo Jima at the age of 19. When the telegram came to tell his mother that he was dead, it went to the Hilltop General Store, and a barefoot boy ran that telegram up to his mother's farm. The neighbors could hear her scream all night and into the morning. The neighbors lived a quarter of a mile away. The next guy, as we continue to go around the statue, is my dad, John Bradley from Antigua, Wisconsin, where I was raised. My dad lived until 1994, but he would never give interviews. When Walter Cronkite's producers or the New York Times would call, we were trained as little kids to say, no, sir, I'm sorry, but my dad's not here. He's in Canada fishing. No, there's no phone there, sir. No, we don't know when he's coming back. My dad never fished or even went to Canada. Usually he was sitting right there at the table eating his Campbell's soup. But we had to tell the press that he was out fishing. He didn't want to talk to the press. You see, my dad didn't see himself as a hero. Everyone thinks these guys are heroes because they're in a photo and in a monument. My dad knew better. He was a medic. John Bradley from Wisconsin was a caregiver. In Iwo Jima, he probably held over 200 boys as they died. And when boys died in Iwo Jima, they writhed and they screamed in pain. When I was a little boy, my third grade teacher told me that my dad was a hero. When I went home and told my dad that, he looked at me and said, "I want you always to remember that the heroes of Iwo Jima are the guys who didn't come back, did not come back." So that's the story about six nice young boys. Three died on Iwo Jima and three came back as national heroes. Overall, 7,000 boys died on Iwo Jima in the worst battle in the history of the Marine Corps. My voice is giving out, so I'm going to end here. Thank you for your time. Suddenly, the monument wasn't just a big old piece of metal with a flag sticking out of the top. It came to life before our eyes with the heartfelt words of a son who did indeed have a father who was a hero. Maybe not a hero in his own eyes, but a hero nonetheless.
Wow. Thank you, Susan. That was... I think that it does really give us a good picture of war and the emotion that it causes. I think all three of us, Rick and myself and Susan, have also been parents. How many kids do you
Two.
Have? And how old are they, Susan?
43 and 42.
Boy, just about like mine. Mine are, well, I got married a couple years later, so I shouldn't have kids old as you. But my kids are 40, 45 and 43, yes, okay. Mm. And Rick, you've got a daughter, don't you?
Yeah, she's only 26.
Yeah, well, and you're only... 39, so that would explain that.
Yeah, that does.
We can get away with that because it's radio.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's true. But it is, you know, and we were talking earlier, there is nothing. You know, I remember when my daughter was very young and she had an ear infection. And I had to take her into the clinic here. And they cleaned her ears out, you know, and did all that kind of stuff. And I was crying. And I remember the nurse telling me, "You're such a baby," you know, that, you know. And but there's nothing that hurts you more than something that hurts your children, and something that you can't do anything about. And I didn't have any kids in, you know, in a war or anything, but. Does that make sense to you, Susan? I mean, that you've got these kids all the way across the world. You don't know where they're at. You know, you don't have FaceTime, you know.
Well, I think the thing that really touched me reading this is that just the idea that, I mean, everybody knows that statue and everybody knows that photograph. And we think of all of those young men as heroes. And to hear the real stories of what really happened to them and how devastating their lives were. Talking about Vietnam and Iwo Jima, we've just talked a lot today about young men dying in war long before they should have.
Yeah. And, you know, we've all seen those pictures. Another example to me would be, how many times have we seen those pictures of the Marines coming off the landing craft in Omaha Beach, and the you know the front ends of those things dropping down, and then you kind of see the whole beach from far away, and you see people falling, and you know that they're being shot and dying, and it just is it seems kind of so surreal, but. I think that it's important that we remember that. We should think more about war before we get into it. And I can't even imagine what's going on right now. I have graduate students that are from the Ukraine and the destruction, and you know, you've just destroyed a whole infrastructure, roads, sewers. Electricity. Everything is destroyed. Let me also read one of the things that we did was we were given a lot of articles from old beachcombers, from articles that were written to the letters to the editor. And so also Susan transposed these for me. They were all an old microfiche. And here was one that was written in 1966. So this is 7/28, so it's July 28, 1966. And it says, younger brother writes in part in Vietnam War. Private First Class Larry Stair, younger brother of Ellis Stair, wrote to his family from Vietnam last week, and parts of the letter appear below. I've been kind of bogged down in the mud of the monsoon season on a field problem. I'm about 15 miles from the Cambodian border near the village of An Lok and Lok Him. Pretty rough area. The last 2 weeks we have had three very large battles in which we wiped out the 272nd Regiment of North Vietnam. We have killed over 1,000 and captured 400 more. I'm glad I'm in the artillery. I watch the infantry and armored units returning after the battle. It's hard for me to feel sorry for myself after that. Since I'm a surveyor, my job was completed before the battle started. I listened to the whole battle on the radio. Our batteries fired over 2,000 rounds in the 3.5-hour battle, and fired on the retreating Kong all the way to the Cambodian border and maybe beyond. I talked to an infantryman yesterday who said that they were still finding bodies as conducted sweeping operations. You can see some of these old French mansions around here. We are very close to the very large rubber plantations that were operated by the wealthy French cooperatives. Some of these huge houses are really unbelievable. This also the scene of many of the big French battles lost to big Ho Chi Minh years ago. You see blown up French tanks and truck bodies everywhere, just resting in the rain and sunshine. Oh, I really get a kick out of Gay's drawings, especially the one of a soldier in a cage. I feel like it sometimes. And no, Gay, I don't like the Army. That brings to mind something that, while he says he was a surveyor here, there were over 20 people in Vietnam who did work other than being infantrymen and riflemen that backed up the troops. We're talking about clerks. We're talking about cooks. We're talking about secretaries. We need to just even talk about all the civilians that were there. And that's really important, too. There's also something else I'd like to do now. And just to read some short articles that were also in the Beachcomber. Some of these are very, very short. This one just says, Captain Ross Grelia, son of Mr. and Mrs. Mark J. Grelia, received the Bronze Star Medal March 31st near Saigon, Vietnam. The 25-year-old captain arrived in Vietnam in May of 1968. He He has also received the Army Commendation Medal. Captain Gurlia graduated from Vashon High School in 1961 and received his commission through the Reserve Officers Training Program at the University of Washington, Seattle, where he received his BA degree in 1965. He is a member of Phi Kappa Sigma Fraternity. So again, we know that there were 12 people from Vashon, 12 young men from Vashon, that died in Vietnam, which at the, when the population at that time was 6,000. Also, at this time, I cannot go on without paying tribute to some men and women who gave so much for this country. I may miss some names, which is not intended, but these men and women made a special, profound, and lasting impression on me as I did the interviews. I will forever feel blessed to have met them and made friends with many of them. I am dedicating this series of Vietnam episodes to them because they have guided me. These are the folks that I've talked to that, as I've sat at my microphone here, have brought tears to my eyes, but also tears that are both happy and sad. The first and most prominent in my mind is Chris Gaynor. He was first Sergeant Chris Gaynor. He always, when I get him on the phone, when I call him, he always says, Sergeant Chris Gaynor. He was first to respond to my request to find vets. Chris is an amazing, honest, and ethical person. He's a classical guitar player. Has written several books on Vietnam, has done thousands of photographs. He was a Vietnam veteran who has spent a lifetime supporting other veterans. He is a photographer, a journalist, an author, a fierce warrior, a kind man, and he is gay. He fought for others' rights who would have preferred that he not have the same rights. He also experiences Parkinson's disease from Agent Orange in Vietnam. He is still fighting the good fight. Another name you may recognize from Vashon is Emma Amiad. She was not a Vietnam veteran. She was, however, a Vietnam era veteran, Vietnam era. She has dedicated much of her life since then to civil rights issues such as racial injustice and gay rights. Emma is an American who supports all our veterans, but feels the wars are not solutions to the world's problem. Let's just talk a little bit in general now. And I like to kind of, with our team here, with Rick and Susan, talk about some of these things. Let's start with you, Rick. Again, what are the things that have made an impression on you in listening to especially this third series, these letters and these kinds of things?
Well, it's the fact that these kids are so young. Well, there's a few, like you mentioned, the captain who was in his mid-20s.
Yeah, but the old man was 24.
Yeah, and but the majority, not the majority maybe, but a lot of these kids were 18, 19 years old. There was an issue of, remember Life magazine?
Right.
Yeah, there was an issue of Life magazine where they had pictures of all the guys who had been killed that week. Yeah, it was a weekly news magazine. And they had pictures of all the guys who had been killed that week in their thing, and it gave their name and their age. And I sat in the base library and was reading that magazine. And it was unbelievable because, you know, you see this kid, he's 19. See this kid, he's 20. See this kid, he's 24. See this kid, he's 18. And it was just page after page of kids my age that were no longer with us.
Yeah. And I think the average age was just a little over 19. So when you consider that there are some people that were quite a bit older, that says a lot.
The older ones tended to stay out of the way.
Yes, yes.
Young guys got sent out front.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anything else?
That was the big thing that strikes me is how many, like you say, 2.4 million people involved in the experience in Vietnam. And, you know, maybe half of them or a third of them were in actual combat.
Right.
But that's a lot of people that saw awful stuff.
Yeah.
And brought it home with them, either inward or outward, and, you know, have to deal with it every day.
And I find it fascinating that even though that happened many years ago, 50 years ago plus, that you can remember sitting in the library with that Life magazine, and I remember that Life magazine.
Yeah.
And you remember where you probably remember where you're sitting in the library for that matter, you know?
Pretty close.
Susan, thoughts?
Well, my thoughts were so similar to Rick's, the youthfulness, the idea that these were kids, these were boys who had, who should have been in their backyards playing basketball with their friends. They were instead in this very foreign country, very foreign to their experience. We don't have a climate like Vietnam any place in the U.S.
That's right, yeah.
Or a geography like Vietnam any place in the U.S. And here these young 18, 19-year-old boys were there fighting a war without really ever being sure what they were fighting for.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I remember one of the things when I was a kid, that, and I think everybody can remember this, there are certain things in your life, certain smells that you remember. I remember my mom's apple pie, or I remember my mom making molasses cookies. And yet, when we talked to so many of these young men, the one thing that they said was, and they can remember it, and I'm sure diesel fuel is not as attractive as molasses cookies, but those are the things that are vivid. And when you heard this last person, when you heard Paul O'Connell talk, I mean, you heard the emotion in his voice, and he can remember those kinds of things like they're right yesterday, you know. And I think that's the thing with PTSD, that a lot of these things are repressed and then they come up later. And so we're going to call that quits for this series, or not for the series, excuse me, for this episode. And thank you very much, Vashon, for listening, and take care.
Listening to Is Abled with Dr. Stephen Nurse. This has been part 3 of his series on the war in Vietnam entitled A Letter is a Living Voice. To hear additional episodes, including his previous series on the Vietnam War, go to voiceofvashon.org and look for Is Abled under the Shows tab.